a gentleman we've had on the show many times before, Michael Bode with Waiting for Next Year. Michael, we appreciate the time today. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me on.
Well, you wrote an article most recently simply titled Let Bobby Bradley Rip, and I thought it was very fascinating how you put a few Godzilla pictures in there as well, very well illustrated. You offered some very, very good analytical information, some spray charts and more. I want to give you an opportunity here to elaborate on the results that you found in your research on Bobby Bradley, on how some of that could translate into some success for him in an Indians uniform.
Sure. So the first part of that, as you mentioned, is the spray chart. So from the moment Bobby Bradley has entered the Cleveland Indians system, he has demonstrated an ability and proficiency at hitting to all fields, and not just hitting to all fields, but having legitimate power to all fields. The spray chart that's on that article that you mentioned shows that he has hit nearly as many home runs to left field as he has to his poolside right field. And his longest home runs are actually to center field. In addition to that, when you pull it in into the outfield a bit, you still see that he's getting singles and doubles, and even his fly ball outs are pretty well spread across. His ground balls do go to bits of his pull side, so he probably will be shifted from time to time, but he hits often enough that they won't be able to do a full shift. You'll probably see one of those half shifts where the shortstop is sort of at the second base bag and the third baseman's as a shortstop, rather than some of the full ones that you might see with Jose Ramirez, where everyone almost seems like they're on the right side or left side of the infield.
Taking a look a little bit further into some of these numbers, one of the things that really stood out to me were the weighted runs created numbers. And you discuss in here how his numbers, about 10% above the average, and how the Indians have gotten way, way below the league average in that particular category, especially from their DH position so far this year. How excited should we be about his weighted run created numbers?
So, yeah, so the weighted run created numbers, the baseline for a first baseman, to say that you have a successful first baseman, is 110. And for a rookie to be able to hit a 110, it's a tall order, especially for potentially a power hitter. We've seen Joey Gallo with the Texas Rangers that we'll see next week in Texas. He struggled a bit at first. He had all of the power, but the strikeouts were alarming, and it took him a couple of years to figure out how to wait on the pitches that he could put his bat into and get full power into that. So his weighted run created number was a bit lower for his first couple years than you might like. But even though a 110 is what you want, so 10% better than average for a first baseman, and even it's about 115 for a designated hitter, Bobby Bradley's in this fantastic situation where if he even comes to 90 or 100, so if he's even anywhere near an average hitter, plus demonstrating that power that we all know he has in his bat, he's giving the Indians just a phenomenal upgrade from what they're getting right now. So that right now the Indians, out of the designated hitter spot, are hitting 33% less than average for any major league hitter, not just designated hitter. So really they're losing about 50% of production out of that one spot, which when it's a person on your lineup that is only supposed to hit, it really speaks to the 2019 season with the offensive ineptitude that we've seen.
And let's stay on that for just a second here, because if indeed he does get the call up, and we don't know if that's going to happen anytime soon, some believe that maybe he could use at least a few more weeks there in order to get ready. But be that as it may, you've talked about the numbers that the Indians have certainly lacked from the DH spot in the order. And certainly there are a lot of individuals to blame for that. The question becomes, if they do call up Bobby Bradley, who are they going to send down, and who are they going to release? Now, as far as sending down is concerned, Jake Bowers seems like an obvious candidate, even though the Indians are doing the best they can to try and give him every possible opportunity to succeed and show that they actually made a good move in that deal to get him in exchange for Yandy Diaz last year, but we'll set that aside. I mean, Jose Ramirez is always a name that you hear pop up, or at least in recent days, he's a name that's popped up as a potential sending down to AAA candidate. And then you've got Leonis Martin, who just has not been able to hit well enough recently. Am I missing anybody in there? Are there some other candidates we should be considering if they call up Bobby Bradley who should be either sent down or released?
The only candidate that you didn't mention would be Tyler Naquin. It seems the Indians organization is going to give him a longer leash, at least until Bradley Zimmer is healthy, potentially later in July, early August. But otherwise, you name the basic names. I think the obvious name is the one you mentioned first, Jake Bowers. I think he could really use a Jose Ramirez, Lonnie Chisenhall back in 2015. You know what? It's the month of July. Go down to Columbus. Get your head on straight. Remember that you are a good hitter, that you've shown on every other level and even the major league level last year, and then come back to us in August, and we'll see that if you can get that production back.
Do you think that same rule could apply with Jose Ramirez? I know we didn't intend to go down this road, but do you think the same kind of things could apply with him? Because right now, he just seems like he's twisted up in the worst way possible at the plate, and some of that feels like it's actually extending into his defensive play as well.
Absolutely. It definitely has affected him all over the field. Even on the bases, he has seemed tentative, where he has never been the tentative runner. Zach Mizell of The Athletic was tracking how many times his helmet flew off because he was so crazy on the base pass the past couple of years. The problem with sending a veteran down, and even though Jose Ramirez is a 26-year-old, I think we can all agree that he's reached veteran status through the last three seasons, is that there's a pride factor in that. I think that Jose Ramirez would prefer you put him on the 10-day DL, or IL this year, so apologies, and you give some bogus reason for it, and you just let him rake at the batting cages, or you know what, at this point, if he wants to lock himself in a room and play Mario Kart for 10 days and come back and see if it works, I'm fine with it.
I like what you did there. Maybe we'll just say he slipped on a banana peel in Mario Kart, and that put him on the 10-day DL with, oh, I don't know, let's call it a left shin contusion. And then hopefully that 10-day rest or that two-week rest will help get his head back on straight. Michael Bodie with Waiting for Next Year is our guest here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. All right, we'll move on to some more positive subject matter here. You wrote a fascinating article not too long ago discussing the patient power factor of Carlos Santana. I thought you detailed this extraordinarily well. Let's discuss some of your major findings here, because you could certainly look at the old school traditional stats and see that Carlos Santana has had a real nice start to the year, and that's refreshing because he's typically a guy that doesn't start out all that hot, but he's been outstanding this year, but it goes way beyond the traditional numbers.
Absolutely. So what the patient power factor is looking at how often you walk versus strike out and then adding in the power. So one of the Carlos Santana's big downsides early in his career was that he was patient. He'd walk a bunch, and he would get the bat on the ball so he wouldn't strike out, but he was trading off his power to do it. He was hitting those little bloopers to the opposite field, and he had so much more potential that we all saw that he started realizing in his last couple years in Cleveland, last year in Philadelphia, and then obviously this year he's been phenomenal. And so when I started looking into the numbers of, okay, what has he really been doing there, I found he's in a fantastically elite group. So there are very few players in Major League Baseball, and the number has actually grown to seven players who have more walks than strikeouts this year. Then when you factor in power, so isolated power demonstrates how many extra bases that you're getting for each one of your hits. So it's really just it's stripping out walks, stripping out singles, and just showing you what are you doing as far as a power factor. There are only four players in baseball that have walked more than they have struck out and have an isolated power of 200 or above. Though Mookie Betts over his last week has really made a charge at that, and he's closing in. But the names are exactly who you would expect: Cody Bellinger, Mike Trout, Alex Bregman, and Carlos Santana.
Wow. I mean, that's pretty exclusive company. You think about the other names on that list. And it seems like those guys have certainly gotten a lot more attention. Maybe on the national scene, they've gotten a lot more attention. Carlos Santana's success certainly hasn't been dismissed here. But, I mean, Michael, that's incredible because that's exclusive company for Santana.
Yeah, and it's worth noting that Cody Bellinger and Mike Trout are still in a class of their own. There's other numbers that you would have to factor in and show. They do so much more with the baseball at the plate than any other hitters in Major League Baseball do. However, Carlos Santana and Alex Bregman are virtually identical this year. When you go to the traditional numbers, Santana has 15 points higher on batting average. He has 8 points higher on on-base percentage, and Bregman has just 8 points higher on slugging percentage. Those numbers are so close, you can pretty much swap those slash lines, and neither team would care.
Yeah, no doubt about that. I think about Cody Bellinger, and I think back to November and December when the rumors were out there, and we don't know how realistic these were at the time, or we may not know anytime soon, but when Corey Kluber and Trevor Bauer were being dangled, there was the rumor that one of those guys might be headed to the Dodgers, and the thought at the time was, well, the Indians want Cody Bellinger, and the Dodgers are just politely saying, no, no chance. You just wish that maybe the Indians may have done something to sweeten that deal just a little bit because, man, he would look good in the outfield for the Tribe, no question about that. Well, speaking of deals, you also wrote an article a couple weeks back talking about some players the Indians could potentially trade for in June. And as you look back at that list, I mean, certainly some things have changed, but as you look back at that list, who do you think they could still realistically target? Because everybody thinks that they're approaching this thing as more sellers at this point than perhaps buyers, because there aren't many people out there that think that they're going to be actively pursuing other talent. So if you're to look back at this list, who do you think they could realistically still target that could come in and make an impact?
So when I created this list, it was to look at the players who you might be able to get a bit early from the trade deadline. So they're all players in the last year of their deal, and they're all players that would specifically help an area of the Indians that was lacking so far in 2019. And yes, Ken Rosenthal and Buster Olney are coming out stating that their expectation is that some of the high-level players on the Indians might be traded. Personally, I think it's executives of other teams adding Indians players to their wish list, realizing they're a small market and hoping that they become sellers, because the core of the Indians is still there. We all know the injury concerns. And so I actually still believe the Indians will be small buyers at the trade deadline rather than sellers. So looking at the list of who would help the most, one name, if the Indians decide to keep Bobby Bradley down in Columbus longer, would be bringing back Edward Encarnacion. Seattle, after their hot start, has fallen apart. Edwin has not. And his bat, paired with Carlos Santana, we saw how fun that was in 2017. So it would take some money, as Seattle still owes him $20 million for this year. So by the time you get offsets for time served and everything else, maybe if Seattle is willing to split the remaining, they could save $8 million. The Indians add $8 million to their payroll, and they get one of the dominant power hitters of the last decade. The other players would be targeting specific positions, and they each have some of their own positives and negatives. Scooter Gennett from Cincinnati would be fantastic at second base. We have gotten no production out of Jason Kipnis or Mike Freeman, and he would be the most obvious add in the last year of his deal. He's been injured all year, and Iglesias is signed through next year for the Reds, so they could potentially move on while rebuilding, as, again, they seem at this point that they'll be outside the wild card race. The other names on the list that I'm be most interested in would be potentially taking a flyer on Yasiel Puig. He signed a one-year deal with the Reds. He could potentially catch fire, as he has done with the Dodgers in the past few seasons, and bring something big to the Indians, despite the fact, given his struggles this year, he probably would not cost that much. Obviously, that would be a risk. The other one would be someone that himself wants to add to that patient power factor with Carlos Santana and Justin Smoke. He's a very similar hitter to Santana. He strikes out just a bit more, but does add that power. But again, you'd be talking about a first baseman designated hitter.
Very interesting names on that list, no question about that. And I think it would be at least a little bit of a surprise to some if the Indians went down that road, but not to you or I, because I think you and I are in the same boat. I think, if anything, if they stay within a couple of games of that wild card, I don't think they're going to become sellers. And I think the only guy they might be willing to part ways with would be Trevor Bauer. But if you get guys healthy, he becomes a little bit more expendable. I mean, injuries are never good, but I think injuries in this case for the Indians to the starting rotation, it has exposed some of the depth that they've got at the minor league levels, especially when it comes to starting pitching. And that, of course, makes some of the starting five a little more expendable. And a guy like Bauer certainly fits that bill. But I'm with you. I think they will be small buyers, if nothing else, unless they really lag behind in the wild card race. But I have a hard time believing they're going to fall that much further behind the Rangers. And, of course, they've got some golden opportunities coming up on the horizon to make up some ground on the Rangers starting next week. Michael, we appreciate the time as always, my friend. Always a pleasure to have you on, and we will definitely do it again soon.
All right, thank you.